Autumn Shadows in August by Robert W. Norris. Copyright 2006, Robert W. Norris. Read by Robert W. Norris. If you would like to order a PDF download or trade paperback copy, go to www.lulu.com/Robert Norris. Autumn Shadows in August is also available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other online bookstores. We paused for a long time, ruminating the memories and images of India. Undine was the first to speak again. "I started telling you 1 hour ago about our trip by car from Kabul. It was in springtime, and all the roads, the normal road going to Afghanistan, it was built from the Americans and the Russians, because the Russians, for them, was road important going down to the Caspian Sea, and Americans, it was oil or whatever, I don't know what, to build the roads. So the Americans and the Russians built the roads. They had beautiful roads. And they had not much cars and not many people in Afghanistan, but the roads, the main roads, were beautiful, you know. And going away from the main road, you came on the mud road, and in springtime, the mud road, you couldn't drive. This is normal cars. You had to go into big trucks or something. We drove into the north in springtime. Somewhere in some village, we had to leave our car, go on in a big truck, and going to Ankui, I think we drove 12 hours for 100 kilometers. From Charikar to Ankui, but it was so beautiful, I never get this out of my head." Undine picked up a pencil and started tapping it on the desk at the end of each sentence, as if marking a rhythmical beat on a drum. "We stopped for tea, we stopped for praying, we stopped for eating, and the truck was full of people, and sacks full of corn, and sheeps were in there too, and goats were on the top, and a lot of Afghan people, and a lot of women. And we were singing German songs, then they were singing Afghan songs, then they went down praying, then we went down pushing the car through the mud, you know. This took us so many, many, many hours, and there was one guy, there was a mullah, also along, and in Antukui, I don't know how, somebody, our money got stolen in one shop because Thomas was always the guy who left his bag down."
"Spaced out, no doubt," I said, pointing to my head and making a circle in the air.
"Yeah, yeah. The money was $500 or something like this.
That was a lot of money then."
"A lot of money. And because of this trouble, we got together with this mullah again. He was helping us, you know. I don't know exactly how it went out."
"Was Thomas speaking any Pashto?" I asked.
"A little bit. Not really, no. It was the first trip. No, it was when we lived in Kabul. Yeah."
Undine strained to remember.
"Before, in my pregnancy. Because I had my pregnancy. The whole pregnancy was in Kabul living, you know. And so we got together because of this problem. We got together with the mullah, and then driving home together with the mullah. There was north, really up north to the Russian border. The Russian border where the Amu Darya was. The river who was between Afghanistan and Russia. And there was a stripe of land you couldn't go. You needed a special permit because of the Russian people, you know. You could not come close to the border. But because of the mullah, we go through. We got into this important region. He brought us in. And there we had the experience. Here was a yurt." Undine moved her arms about and her voice rose. "And here was a tent. And it was a free, region. You know, you was staying there. It was open region, you know. And this one evening, the sun was like a fireball going down. And the moon was on the other side. Same thing coming up." Undine suddenly stood up, extended her arms, and looked from side to side with bulging eyes. "Ah," Kaori said, her eyes fixed on Undine, captivated by the emotional power pouring out of Undine's massive frame. "I was standing there. I have pictures. I was standing there. I was singing. You know, I was 58 kilos at this time, and had a kuchi dress on, a red kuchi dress, and Thomas took a picture of me in this light, you know. I never forget this. We were staying there. I think my tears went down. I got touched so emotionally. That was one of the nicest experiences I have with the nature. In that land where few people can... In this land! I tell you something." Undine looked at me intently. "I lived 1 year in Kabul, and I went there sometimes. I don't know how many times, not too long, say, altogether is maybe 1.5 years. But this country is so familiar to me. It's like my home country.
I don't know Germany, but I know most all of the cities of Afghanistan because there were not so many and not so many people." Undine sat down again, and a short silence ensued. Then she leaned toward us with another smile and said, "Oh, this story I have to tell you. I have to tell you this story. In Kabul, when I was pregnant, Thomas had an accident a short time before we want to go home. He drove the Mercedes on a road to the museum. I don't know if you know where the museum was, but it was a big road, you know, wide. And was a bus station, and we drove. And two of these people, they came, two old men, and they run into our car. And this one old man break his leg. We took him to hospital. We did everything, you know. But the police took Thomas in the car away because a foreigner in those times was always guilty, you know. So they took him from this moment on. The old man, we brought him to hospital. And then they took Thomas, but they never let him go. And they didn't put him in jail. They put him in traffic office where all these people made to stay. So I had to bring him things. They had nothing to sleep on. I had to bring him mattress. I had to bring him food and everything, money and everything." Undine sank back in her chair a moment, then rose up quickly. "They took him for weeks. I was pregnant." Undine held her hands in front of her stomach. "I wanted to leave the country, you know. I went to the German embassy and talked with them, and they couldn't help much because they had one man also from there. They had nearly the same problem, you know. So it was on for weeks and weeks and weeks. I had to go to this man in the hospital and find out what happened and so forth. The family was rich. There was one in the Radio Kabul, I remember. They wanted money. They asked for $1,000. It was not our fault, but anyway, it was our fault from their side. So they had him for a long time, you know. Then he came out, but he had no passport. A short time before this happened, two Americans were coming. Moved in our street opposite house. So we came together, cooked together. There was this guy, Steve Sugar. He was a small one with glasses. They came in our house. Thomas had his pictures along from California because this time was so important for him. It was an important time. Jefferson Airplane. I don't know how many groups he met. And making music in the parks in this time and being in California, you know. All the hippies and nice people, everybody friendly. This was something so new for him, you know. This short, I don't know, was some months he was in the States. This was so important. He took the pictures he made in those times. He took along to Afghanistan. Then this guy came. They looked at the pictures, and then he said, "Man, that's me! That's me in the picture! That's me!" Undine mimicked the man, pointing her finger excitedly at an imaginary picture. So it was Steve Sugar. Not only in one place. It was first Jefferson Airplane because Thomas knew them through a who, I don't know. He went on stage. He went from stage making pictures down into the people, and Steve Sugar was there. He went to other festivals like Hare Krishna festivals. Steve Sugar was there. He had them on the picture. And I'll tell you something. Undine paused briefly, holding Cowardy and me in her eyes. When Thomas could not leave Afghanistan because of his passport problem, and I had to fly home because I didn't want to, I know the situation of hospitals in Kabul because I always went to one friend who was there. He was in jail, but then he had hepatitis and had to go to hospital. I went there every day, even with my friends. We brought him just vegetables and things to eat. I went into this place where about 12 people had hepatitis, so I got hepatitis. But I wasn't afraid because it was my friend, so I had to go there. Mike, who comes from Holland, he was in hospital, and I visited him every day, so I got hepatitis too, but I didn't know. So I had to fly home. Thomas couldn't go, couldn't leave Afghanistan. After traffic office, he was in the house again, and then I flew home with a German girl. We had to go over Jordan, stayed there for some days. Then I came here, and Natasha's birthday date was normally the 28th of January, but she got born 1 week after I came from Afghanistan, on the 6th of December. Thomas was still there in Afghanistan, and I wrote him a telegram. Undine stopped to take a deep breath, then continued, enunciating slowly and clearly each word. "Please come home. Natasha born. I'm sick in hospital. Hepatitis. Natasha in hospital in Basel. Pray for her." Undine took another breath, then spoke rapidly again. "Because she was only 3 pounds and some grams, you know, because she came too early. So Thomas, he said, 'I have to go home, doesn't matter how, I have to go. Steve Sugar—'" "Was still there?" I said, trying to give Undine a chance to breathe. "Was still there," she said, not missing a beat. Steve Sugar gave him his glasses. Steve Sugar gave him his passport. Steve Sugar then went to the American Embassy and said, "I lost my passport." Thomas Kenora was going overnight home, over Pakistan, over Holland, as Steve Sugar, and arrived here, and got me out of hospital some days before Christmas. And I was already, "I don't want to be here this Christmas, all the people buying things and stuff." I saw it from far away because the normal hospital, when Natasha got born, on the same day Natasha got born, I got from the doctor the news that I have hepatitis. So they couldn't let me go into the normal, where they get the children. What's the place?
You were quarantined? I asked.
I had to go to quarantine, right. And you know what the quarantine place was here?
Undine said, frowning.
It was like a dog hut. So they took me down from the big hospital in the morning, in the early morning. It was foggy and dark. And I came from Afghanistan, where there's every day nice weather. It's every day blue sky, even in the winter, you know. And dry, nice, nice.
Undine looked upward and raised her hands as if trying to touch the Afghan sky once more.
So in the morning Natasha got by ambulance to Basel because they had no incubator here in Lorak. And this I never forget, because when she had to go away I was so afraid, you know, of losing her. And then the next day they took me in the morning, 6 o'clock they took me in the bed and drove me over the street to a wooden place where the quarantine is.
Amazing, Cowardy said, her voice choked.
I got too emotional to tell you.
Undine put a tissue to her eyes.
I feel it, you know.
We feel it too, I said. I can visualize being there, the situation. But when Thomas came back, he entered Germany on an American passport.
On an American passport. And even somewhere on the border they talked to him and he was talking in English.
His English was very good.
Yeah, but not as an American. And this Steve Sugar visited us when Natasha was about 6 months in summertime. He was once more here because he was once in summertime here, and he was once in wintertime here.
Thomas could have been put in prison in many countries for carrying a false passport, I said.
Oh, yes, and then I tell you. And then he wanted to go back to Afghanistan, but he was afraid, so he didn't go back for something years, and I went back in this time, you know. I went then with the photographer who made this picture of young Thomas I gave you.
I still had the picture in my hand. We looked at it again, feeling as if Thomas was there with us.
Was that the time you met Atala? I asked. Thomas met Atala in Afghanistan, not me. And then he came here once, but I don't remember.
Probably that time when I met them in Paris, because
that was the first time Atala came to our house. It's possible. Yes, yes, yes.
That was the first time out of his country, and it was very difficult for him to get a visa, I said.
Yes, yes, and he was long time here because I have pictures with him in snow. So you were here when? Summertime?
I was here in late February.
Ah, late February. Then it's... Yeah, yeah. That was his first time, and he was so good with the baby. Baby was crying. Atala took it. He was quiet. He was running around with Boris, I remember.
Undine smiled broadly.
He was a handsome man in his way.
Yeah, a crazy one.
We laughed.
Short, stocky, big chest. He had stomach problems, I said.
Because of eating here after Afghanistan.
I remember he was kind of overwhelmed by all the buildings and machines and everything. He missed Afghanistan.
Yeah, because Afghanistan... Undine paused and sighed. That was what turns me on so much. I felt like in the Middle Ages, out of everything, you know? Out of everything. And just being, nothing was really terrible. No machine and no big buildings and not, you were, how can I say?
I remember Afghanistan as one of the most peaceful countries I'd ever been, I said.
Peaceful, peaceful. I was never afraid to be in Afghanistan. I would never go alone to Pakistan, never in my life.
Never liked to go alone to India, but Afghanistan, yeah. And oh, I must tell you this. I was never afraid of my life like the time we were going through the Khyber Pass, you know. You know the Khyber Pass?
Oh, yes, I said. I passed through there, too, on the way to India.
Undine rolled her eyes and sucked in a deep breath.
Yeah, yeah, that place. We were going and everywhere Thomas is making pictures and we're waiting in the car for our passports. And it's taking a long time, so Thomas and I are getting out of the car and he is making more pictures. You cannot do this, you know, at the border. Oh, I never forget this. Thomas is out of the car and making pictures, and suddenly all the men, many Pakistani men with beards and turbans and dark skin, these men are coming around us and pointing their guns and shouting in big voices and shaking their fists like this. Undine shook her right fist in the air. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is the end. We're going to die. They're going to kill us like spies. Cowdy's eyes were bulging. Why did they think you were spies? She asked excitedly. Undine laughed, then reached over to touch Cowdy's arm. Because we are foreigners, and that part of Pakistan is not for tourists. Many strange people. They're selling guns and drugs and many things. You cannot make pictures. But didn't Thomas know about that? Cowdy asked. Oh, yeah. He knows about that, but he's a crazy boy. Undine winked at me. And we were very, very lucky because at that time a policeman is suddenly appearing and he said to Thomas, give me a new film and the camera. So Thomas gave him the film and the camera and the policeman is doing this. Undine stretched her hands far apart as if exposing a roll of film before the angry crowd. And he threw the film on the ground and acting like he is angry. Then he gave the camera back to Thomas. It still had the first film inside. And he told the people, go away, go away, there is no problem. And you know, I still have those pictures. Undine threw her head back and laughed and rocked in glee. You were lucky the policeman helped you, Cowdy said. Oh, yeah, lucky. Thomas was many times lucky. And me too. But that was Pakistan. Like I said, I never feel afraid in Afghanistan. You know what it is, Afghanistan? It's so how do you say it in English?
Something peaceful, I guessed.
Strong, strong, nature strong. Arkesh, Arkesh. I don't know English name. You felt the past. You felt the past because there were no factories and no this. I don't know how you say.
Archaic? Cowardy said.
Yeah, archaic. That's what it means, archaic. And that you felt.
I felt the same thing, I said. It was a little bit like going back into the pages of the Bible, the Old Testament.
And the beautiful air, you know. I remember situations when we had no... First time when we drove there, we had no petrol anymore. And we saw all these cities, so we thought, no problem. We push and we get there.
Undine pushed her arms out several times.
But we pushed forever and we never came to the city. You know why? We saw the lights, but it was far away. The air was so clean that you saw it so close. Then we got petrol from a driver, just a few liters, and it was to end, and we had to look again. So you saw it's there, Undine snapped her fingers. But it was not there, it was far away.
Like an oasis, almost. Yeah, I took a bus from Herat to Kabul, I said.
I hope you prayed before,
Undine said, grinning. I got out and watched them pray. In those days, I gave up my life to the wind. The wind carried me to Japan. I winked at Cowardy, who smiled back.
That's a good experience, Undine said.
But in the media, the television, newspapers, everything you hear about Afghanistan is war, war, war. But my only experience was peaceful.
Undine leaned back in her chair, closed her eyes for a moment, then said with emotion, they suffer. They have nothing. There is nothing, you know. And it is forgotten country. It's a forgotten country. Because nothing to get anymore. And now inside they don't get freedom, you know.
The three of us shook our heads knowingly, sadly, and sat in silence once more, listening to the rain and traffic outside the shop. Later, at my request, Undine took us to the top of the hill where Thomas and I had taken psilocybin and connected so strongly. There had been 7 trees back there in 1977, and Thomas had pointed them out to me as symbols of man, each reaching out as if groping for love, and I had seen it that way too under the influence of the psilocybin. The rain had stopped. We used an old towel to wipe off the bench at the base of the trees, sat down and stared out beyond to the valley and river below.
You know, Undine started slowly, her hands folded in her lap, Thomas changed very much after you knew him. In that time of Afghanistan he was happy, but later he became dark and angry. It was the first prison time, I think, that changed him. And he came out, he didn't want to work, only drink whiskey and take heroin.
What did he go to prison for? I asked.
Always drugs. 3 times in 7 years in prison.
Undine wrung her hands. Her voice wavered.
3 times, and every time he was coming home, he was a stranger. Not at first, but becoming more and more a stranger to me and the children.
Tears formed in Undine's eyes.
Why do you think he changed? I asked.
I don't know. Maybe he was angry at society. But in my heart it was his family, his father, you know. He was died when Thomas was 12.
I didn't know that. I put my hand on Undine's.
Yeah, died when Thomas was 12. And his mother put more love to him and not his older brother after that. Thomas and his brother were not friends, you know, not like real brothers. His brother became a banker and had much money, but Thomas was more for people and love and did not care about money, not like his brother anyway. And his brother was a cold man and used other people. He was a big company man, and Thomas hated big companies, and they were always fighting, always fighting. It was sad, and I think Thomas had a big hole in his heart, and the whiskey and drugs made him forget the big hole.
Undine looked in the distance for a moment, then, with her voice cracking, said,
"And the day Thomas died, I called his brother, and he said, with bitter taste in his mouth, 'So, he finally killed himself,' and he cut the telephone."
Cowdy was crying now, too. I put my arm around Undine and held her close. She leaned into me limply, her large body quivering, muffled sobs escaping her mouth. "Did he ever write to you from prison?" I asked. Undine wiped her eyes with a handkerchief pulled from her pocket. She forced a thin smile and said,
"Oh, yeah. Beautiful, long letters. One time he wrote me a 60-page letter. It's my treasure."
Undine took a deep breath and exhaled slowly.
"You know, I sometimes think he found a quiet place in prison. His letters were, had bright pictures and hope, like poems. Lots of nature, pictures in his words."
"Did he ever think about writing a book? I mean, he had a lot of adventures and experiences and had a lot of material to write about. I remember he told great stories. He always had a twinkle in his eyes when he told me stories about Afghanistan and Iran and India. I strongly remember that."
"Yeah, he sometimes said, 'I should write a book,' and he always was writing and writing on a notebook, but no, he never did. He lived his story."
We were quiet for a while before Undine spoke again.
"Thomas loved this place. It's not so beautiful now. They cut down some trees and put a parking space over there for cars. Teenagers come here to drink and party. Thomas didn't like that. He thought this was a special, maybe spiritual place, you know, a special nature place."
"Perhaps a sacred place that's been desecrated," I said.
"Maybe, yes."
Undine pointed farther out and below us to the city of Basel, the river flowing through it, and the smokestacks poking up here and there.
"You see all those chemical company tanks, making the air and water dirty? Thomas hated them. All his life he hated them."
I rose from the bench and stretched. The wind was picking up and there was a chill in the air. Undine and Cowardy remained seated.
"You know, Boris and Natasha and me came to here the day Thomas died. It was his favorite place. We sat here and listened to a Van Morrison tape. He was Thomas's favorite singer."
"I remember listening to Van Morrison's album Moondance over and over at your place. It has special memories for me, too," I said. We said little after that. Undine drove us back to the border. Cowardy and I embraced her in a long hug. There were no more words to say. We got on the tram and watched Undine's forlorn figure fade until we rounded a corner and she was gone.